This podcast is produced in part by Podfly.net. Podfly, passion for great sounding podcasts.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
Coming up on Columbia Calling with me, your host Richard McCall, here in Bogota. We're going to start the show talking about the recent events in Colombia, the ousting of the mayor of Bogota, Gustavo Petro, and what this means to the country, what this means to the elections. And then after that, we'll be talking to very special guest Kai Whiting, a white British Muslim here in Colombia. So we'll be talking about whether he, how he practices Islam in Colombia, a predominantly Catholic country. So it will be the first show of its kind talking about religion, talking about faith here in Colombia. So we're talking to a white British Muslim, Kai Whiting, in an overwhelmingly Catholic country. But we'll start the show talking about the recent political events taking place here in Colombia. As always, we have our finger on the pulse, and we're the independent radio station talking about things that perhaps the mainstream press are not covering. So tune in to Columbia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall, later on.
The world is a beautiful place, so listen up. The Overseas Radio Network.
We know you want to grow your business and directly engage your customers and clientele. Podcasting is the way to go, and Podfly has your solution. Whether you're a blogger, writer, business owner, entrepreneur, or service provider, Podfly makes it easy for anyone to have a professionally produced and distributed podcast. Get started today at podfly.net, and let's get your message truly heard. Podfly.net, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
Ready to learn about a new life overseas? You're at the right place. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
Good afternoon. It's that time of the week again, and I'm Richard McCall, and this is Columbia Calling, and you're listening to the first stop shop for everything about Columbia, perhaps on a, let's say, on an independent media radio show. So we're here in Bogota, 2,600 meters above sea level. And this week, as always, we have a very special guest coming on the show later on. His name is Kai Whiting, and he is a British white or white British Muslim here in Bogota. So we're going to be talking about faith and religion this week, and of course how he came to be Muslim, how he converted to Islam, and of course then how he came to be in Colombia, and how he finds Colombia for, you know, as a destination for someone of the Muslim faith, because of course that's very interesting. We all know that Colombia is a very Catholic country. There are obviously evangelical Christians, but not in the numbers of Catholics anyway. So it's very interesting to hear from an expat who is a Muslim and not from, you know, sort of a traditionally Muslim country. So very interesting interview coming up with Kai Whiting, and hopefully he'll open our eyes and keep us informed about things for Muslims in Bogota, for those of you who may know of or be Muslims and thinking of traveling in this region. Well, it's been a long week. I mean, it's been a short week, really, because it's been flying by, but it's been long in terms of events. On the 19th, they finally got rid of Mayor Gustavo Petro, and yeah, well, you know how I stand. If any of you have been listening to this podcast over the last year almost, when we come to June, it'll be a year. You know how I stand. He was elected in. It doesn't matter. He got the number of votes. He got 700,000 votes or thereabouts. It was the majority. For those people who claim that he did not represent the majority, then they didn't vote. I am not a Petrista, so I'm not a supporter of Gustavo Petro, but I do believe in the larger picture of the voting in voting in a leftist former guerrilla into the second most important job in Colombia, in with regards to the ongoing peace accords, peace dialogues that are taking place between the FARC and the government in Cuba. I think it's very important to remember these things. And so, yeah, we had the Attorney General who gets together, and, you know, he's from a very conservative background. That's fine. He's a sort of Inspector General. He's kind of basically unaccountable to no one. Unaccountable to only himself. Anyway, he decided to... the claim was that, how do I explain this, that Gustavo Petro, the mayor of Bogota, tried to take on the sort of mafias of the waste companies here, the refuse companies, the bin men here, and you know, create, well, let's say, a more streamlined process. And of course, he was hindered at every turn, and so there was no waste collection in Bogota for a certain amount of time. And the Inspector General, Ordóñez, said that this had put Bogotanos' lives at risk, having this waste lying around the city. And of course, Bogota was unsightly. There was garbage all over the place. But this is no different from any other day. That's my point. My wife is an epidemiologist. She's an economist and an epidemiologist. And so she is someone who studies the sort of economics of healthcare and health. And her first thing was... Her first comment was, there is absolutely no way that Ordóñez or anyone can prove straight away that Bogotanos' lives were put at risk through the lack of waste collection in that period of time. I mean, this is something that takes place over years, and then they have to study the graphs, and they have to study the incidences of illnesses. And, you know, what can you say about this? There was garbage everywhere, but every single night there's garbage everywhere in Bogota because we put our bags out in the street on the nights that the garbage collectors are coming round, and then the recyclers come round. So the recicladores, who are a very humble sector of society, who come and sift through the garbage to see what is there that they can sell or make use of. And then, of course, and this is great because it's recycling, but then, of course, they leave it strewn over the streets and much of it stays there. So how is that any different to what it was before? Well, here it is. Here it lays the fact. There is no difference. Now, Petro was an incredibly poor man manager and inept mayor, but, he represented something bigger. And if we could just have seen it out, because it sets it's dangerous precedent in two ways. You've got, first of all, sort of undemocratically ousting the man. And now, we've been through months of trials and hearings and sort of claims by the International Court of Human Rights and so on and so forth. And finally, on the 19th, Santos signed the decree that, yes, Petro had to go. Now, Santos, this is a fairly cynical move on his part, because, of course, he's sort of, he's reeling from the blows from the increase of this new party, the Centro Democrático, in the congressional and Senate elections. That's Uribe's party. Well, generally say Zuluaga's party, but Uribe is the man who moves everything. And they took masses of votes away from Santos, who suspiciously won, votes swung his way towards the end of the elections. So he's trying to then sort of garner votes from the conservatives, for the upcoming presidential elections. And so he had to then, be in opposition to Petro. So therefore, you've got that side. And then the other dangerous precedent that you've got, of course, is, ousting someone who's not doing things to the manner in which you see fit. But he was voted in. Petro is the only mayor so far to have, really addressed southern Bogota, the traditionally poor, traditionally working class sections of the city. Now, if this doesn't sit well with the sort of the elites in the leafy, well-heeled barrios, well, yeah, okay, but surely we should all be working together, or perhaps I'm very naive on this fact. And then you've got the dangerous precedent of, so you've got the ousting, you've got the cynicism, and the last mayor was out, and Samuel Moreno, he was incredibly corrupt. He's in jail, and he got banned for, about a year from politics. Petro has been banned from politics or public office for 15 years. I mean, it seemed a little harsh. All he was trying to do was reorganize. So anyway, so that's a very, he's, again, before anyone gets angry, he was inept. He was a dreadful man manager. He rubbed people up the wrong way. He wasn't the right man for the city. Bogota requires someone requires someone who could be the head of an NGO, know how to spend money, receive money and know how to spend it well. So at the moment we now have Rafael Pardo Pardo, who is a liberal, he's a Santista really. It's a very good play by Santos to put Rafael Pardo Pardo, the sort of Labour minister in control as an interim mayor until the elections are called. And yes, well, we'll see what the fallout is. And this is this unfortunate situation with Bogota has taken away from really serious situations in the rest of the country. So there is essentially a lockdown on Buenaventura, the Pacific port, where the people have just finally said, we've had enough. We've had enough of being charged protection fees by all of the criminal gangs. So 600 soldiers, 600 more soldiers, have been sent out to Buenaventura to try and keep public order. And then, of course, Cali is up in arms. And in the city of Cali, there are riots about the police and about the public transport. And so where did these 600 soldiers come from to go to Buenaventura? Well, of course, they were taken from the barracks around Cali. So now Cali is understaffed and Cali is having a major demonstration. So interesting times, as always, here in Colombia. And I hate to start on such negative views, but there's some, sometimes these reports just aren't, they aren't reported on. We don't hear these in the international news unless you're looking for the actual pages in which they might appear, the alternative press. So that's it. Get in touch. You can reach us on, you can see our website. That's www.columbiacallingradio.com. I'm on Twitter at Columbia Calling. Write us an email. Tell us what you think. Suggest people to be interviewed. We'll be right back with Kai Whiting. This is Columbia Calling.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
Okay, you're not stupid. You see the handwriting on the wall. You're thinking about joining the millions of Americans who have already left the country. But where do you go? You don't want to make the mistake of jumping from the frying pan into the fire. You need accurate info to make one of the most important decisions of your life. You need EscapeTheUSAnow.com. You don't want to have regrets because your expat country collapsed due to crime, conflict, disease, famine, natural disaster, scarcity, war, or a government gone bad. Only at EscapeTheUSAnow.com will you discover the handful of countries that offer true freedoms and unbelievable opportunities that most people could only dream of. EscapeTheUSAnow.com is the information you cannot afford not to have. Information that took over 30 years to research, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, with more than a quarter of a million miles traveled. For less than $2.50 per month, you can have what may be the most life-saving information you have ever obtained. EscapeTheUSAnow.com, so you don't jump from the frying pan into the fire.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.JustLanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's JustLanded.com.
You've got questions about Colombia, and Escape Artist has answers. Is Colombia a good fit for me and my plans? How do I buy a house, find a job, find a doctor, start a business, invest in real estate? What should I know to better appreciate its history, its culture, its opportunities? What is it really like to be an expat in Colombia? You'll find your answers at Colombia.escapeartist.com, your complete and trusted guide for living, working, playing, investing, and retiring in Colombia. That's Colombia.escapeartist.com.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
Bye.
Well, we're back, and this is the second segment of the show today, and we're talking, as I said, you know, I mentioned earlier, we're talking to Kai Whiting. Kai is a British Muslim here in Colombia, so it's given us the opportunity to discuss something that we've never discussed before here on Colombia Calling, and that's religion. And as we know, that Colombia is predominantly Catholic, with major inroads into sort of evangelical Christian faiths, which of course is happening in most of South America, because let's say that these evangelical Christian faiths offer a redemption to people, while the Catholics are doing another thing. But anyway, Colombia is primarily Catholic. But I got the opportunity that Kai got in touch with me and said, you know, I'm a white British Muslim here in Colombia, here in Bogota, and I'd like to talk about my experiences. So we're just going to take this opportunity to talk to him and listen to his story. And so, Kai, welcome on the show.
Hi, thank you.
You're very welcome. Now, listen, you're 27 years old. You are, you know, you've got a background from having worked in various places. I just found out that we have the same alma mater there in England. We both went to Exeter University in the southwest, which is a great coincidence. You live in the same area as me here in Bogota, in Chapinero, a very comfortable area. But how did you come to be in Bogota?
That's a very good question. I was living in Spain on and off for 3 years, because at that time I also worked in Latvia, I also worked in China for the United Nations, and I got kind of sick and tired of jumping around, hopping around, so I thought Spain would be the answer, that I would go back. So after doing my internship in China, when finishing a master's that I'd started in Spain, I thought, okay, I'll settle down. But in Spain the crisis was extremely severe, meaning that I couldn't get a permanent contract. It was every 30 days, and I said, I just cannot live like this anymore. My best friend is from Colombia, he was in Zaragoza with me studying, or he was studying, I was teaching, and I said, what is it like there? He said, well, just come and see. So I said, okay, I have nothing to lose, I'm going to come. So I did.
Well, it's amazing. And what is your, let's just say, what is your profession per se? Exactly, you know, I think you do a lot of things.
I get paid for being an academic, and I'm also a consultant. I do consultancy with people in the United Arab Emirates. I get paid for that. Here I also do a bit of journalism, and like any expat really, we try to do a little bit of everything, but yeah, to get paid for, academic really.
And in Zaragoza, yeah, exactly, these things, you were an academic researching mining and physics, and so you came here because, I mean, obviously there's a big background in physics and mining here. I mean, the government of Juan Manuel Santos is busy selling off the country to the mining firms.
Yes,
it's my extreme views on this, but I know that it's going to happen. Whoever is in power, that's the reality of it. And you've written about illegal mining. Yeah, you're writing about that, but you're teaching at the Universidad Piloto, which is a university which here in Chapinero, it's dedicated to more sort of alternative, it's dedicated to architecture.
30 degrees, yeah. Architecture, environment.
And you're teaching environment studies.
Yeah, I was teaching in Tresca, it's small, actually quite a famous town, relatively speaking, just outside of Bogota. It's a lot bigger than the UK. You wouldn't say just outside, but just outside a couple of hours, about ecotourism and the need as a Colombian to not preserve but conserve. And I did talk about the mining development plan of up until 2019 and the supposed need to extract everything at whatever cost. Mm-hmm. And that is also an economic cost, because with the royalties, we actually pay in Colombia for people to take our resources from us. So I was talking about the need to protect it and to value it. And I think in Colombia that's really important. That's what I try to teach my students, valuing. To value themselves and to value the things around them.
And of course this has major tenets with your religion, which is why we're here. And of course, so let's start from the beginning. How did you're from Bishop Stortford, you're from Hertfordshire. I mean, I'm looking at you here across the table. You look Irish. It's kind of, if you can imagine, listeners out there, he's a kind of strawberry blonde type fellow, strawberry blonde beard, very, very pale. I'm sure you burn very easily.
Yes.
Yeah. How did you, come to be, convert to Islam?
It's quite a complicated story, but I did mention that I'm doing consultancy work with people in the UAE. So I started that consultancy work in 2008. and ended up living in a village, and I was the first white person they'd seen outside the television. So I felt like Jesus. It was like, touch me. And all the children used to run up to me and touch me, because I'd never seen a white man before, which was interesting because that also happened in China. But I heard the Adan, and so I said, you know, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. And I said, what is that? Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, that's God is great. God is great. And it goes on, it says, Hayya Salah, Hayya Salah. I said, what is that? And they said, that means come to prayer, come to prayer. And they said, Hala, Hayya Al Falah, Hayya Al Falah. I said, what is that? They said, come to success. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, there's other bits in the Adan, but I said, okay, that's really interesting. And I found out that Cat Stevens had also converted for the same reason. He'd asked, what is that sound? What is that music? And they said, it's not music, it's the call to prayer. And he said, why are they doing that? And they said, oh, they want people to know Allah. He said, well, that's crazy. I'm a musician, I do music for money, and you do music for God, and I want to do music for God. So I heard that, and I investigated it. I went back to the UK, then on to Spain, various other places. And I said, oh, you know what, it's too complicated. I'm not doing it. It's just too complicated. I just don't need that in my life. It's a nice sound. Okay. And then when I went to do my first master's in Scotland, I happened to live 10 minutes from one mosque and 10 minutes from the other. And a friend of mine called Mukhtar from Saudi Arabia said to me, oh, you went to the Emirates. Are you Muslim? And I said, well, no, but I'm not against Islam. Mm-hmm. And he set me a test. He said, I give you a test. You have to live like a Muslim for 2 months.
Huh.
So I said, what do you mean? He said, I will buy you a rug, and you have to grow a beard, and you have to do all the things, and then tell me if you like it. So I said, deal.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like immersion journalism without being the journalist. So obviously now I'm right about that. But at that time, I said, oh, fine. Okay, so we went on eBay, we bought a mat, and I said, right, I'll do it. I said, I'm not against you, and I'm not for learning anything. I'm not against any religion. I'm not against anybody. And if it's a challenge, I'll have it. Mm-hmm. So I did it. And actually, it was very structured, and I think personally I needed the structure, because my life was, and my life still is, very chaotic. And you know, it was hard. You've got to get up at like 5 in the morning, and well, in Scotland the hours are very, very long. So you sometimes you're praying at 1 in the morning, and then you don't pray again, you know, the last prayers at 10. I said, yeah, fine, I'll do that. And just, it sort of was from there. So it was more like an academic thing, more than anything else. And people said, was it very difficult? I mean, I didn't drink alcohol, so I didn't have that problem. Mm-hmm. I didn't party, so I didn't have that problem. So I said, well, no, not really. I didn't have to give up anything. There was nothing to give up. It was just something to look to. Mm-hmm. So that's how it came about, really, which is, I guess, very unusual. Other people that I've spoken in the UK have said, I became a Muslim because my sister died of an overdose of cocaine, or very strong, or a mixture of cocaine with other things. And I said, no, I don't have a tragic story. I don't have a death in my family. That's also a very common one. And the other one, why white Muslims tend to become Muslim, is because George W. Bush said, you're either against us or you're with us. And so I said, well, I'm not with you, so I'm against you. And that's why UK Muslims tend to be, British white Muslims tend to become Muslim, or because their mum marries a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
That's another common one. And in Colombia, it's a little bit different. They tend to say, I was in the Catholic Church, I wanted to become a nun. And I had too many issues with the Catholic Church, so I decided to become Muslim. If I was becoming a nun, it wasn't so different from me, the hijab.
Mm-hmm.
So I searched. And with Colombians, it's always a very academic pursuit. They're very hungry for knowledge, which was I was very surprised about. So I guess they came from the same way that I did.
Uh-huh.
So I feel quite like a Colombian Muslim.
It's really good to know there's like this academic sort of meeting point for you between the faith, and of course then those looking for the Muslim faith in Colombia. I mean, it's got to be, I mean, we've got pockets of immigrants here, you know, and of course we have many people of sort of Arabic descent who've become sort of, you know, there's been a sort of religious syncretism here in Colombia. I mean, we just look at the most famous person of Arabic descent in Colombia, Shakira, of course, Mubarak, what's the last name? I can't remember Mubarak, but anyway. And Barranquilla has their pockets, and Bogota will have its pockets, and Medellin, and in Maicao, there's a big mosque. And this is something we're going to explore more in the next segment of the show. I think we're going to talk a bit more about the spread of Islam in Colombia, where you can find your mosques, and we'll talk about more general things. Like, say, is it a faith that's discriminated against here? I think we've heard your story. Then we're going to hear more about the actual situation in Colombia regarding Islam. I think it's very fascinating, and I'm very happy to have you on the show sharing this, because it's incredibly personal. So we'll be right back, and this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're talking to Kai Whiting.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Kathleen Petticord and Leif Simon with the Live and Invest Overseas Minute on the Overseas Radio Network. One of the most important decisions you face when planning for a move to another country is to do with health insurance. This is a very personal decision with big implications. The first thing to understand is that, with few exceptions, your U.S. health insurance and your U.S. Medicare are not going to travel with you beyond U.S. borders.
But you can find very good and very affordable options for obtaining health insurance in another country, whether you're retiring there or living there, depending on where in the world you're thinking of settling. In some countries, in fact, you can find full local coverage for as little as $100 or less a month.
The alternative would be an international policy. That is, international health insurance from an international health insurer. The critical difference between an international policy and a local policy is to do with geography. A local policy covers you only locally, only in the country where you purchased it, or in some cases, only in particular regions of that country, or only at particular medical care facilities or hospitals. For more information on making the leap overseas, visit us online at liveandinvestoverseas.com.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're talking to Kai Whiting, who's a white British Muslim here in Colombia. We've been talking about how Kai became a Muslim, how he converted to Islam. But now we're going to discuss more of the sort of generalities of the faith here in Colombia, because, of course, this country is overwhelmingly Catholic.
Indeed.
And so, listen, first of all, I mean, I've noticed that they were building a huge mosque near to the Escuela Militar on the Calle 80. That's sort of, as you go out west or in Bogota, I saw that building up. I thought, wow, that's interesting to have that huge mosque there by the kind of by a highway.
Very by a highway.
But, you know, and I found it very interesting. And I asked my wife, who's Colombian and, you know, Catholic, and said, what do you know about this? She knows nothing, you know, about these things. That's not, no insult to her or anything, but, you know, it's not something that's ever been drawn to her attention. But tell me a bit about the sort of, let's say, the Muslim community here in Bogota. How many, like, could you give us like an odd figure, you know?
Yes. One thing I would like to say is that, unlike, say, the UK or Spain, the majority of Muslims are Colombian,
mm-hmm.
because the teaching is in Spanish, and I think that's really important. We do have sheikhs. One, the sheikh at Calle 45, which is the mosque that I attend most, is from Egypt,
mm-hmm.
and they have an Islamic school which they talk about, that you go at the weekends, and the guy is from Tunisia, his name is Elias. And I go there, for example, because 2 weeks ago they did a course on being Islam and a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that very interesting. They take less Islamic kind of teaching in terms of the Quran. They don't sit and talk about the Quran so much, and they talk about how we apply it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the majority are Colombian. There's a strong contingent of women, which is, again, very unusual in England. You go down to Seven Sisters, and you're not going to see a mosque with a room for women, where the mosque at Calle 45, well, they have an upstairs for women and a downstairs for men. And what does that do? That means that women come. I mean, it's obvious. They feel they have a community. So on a given week in that particular mosque, you have anything between 80 to 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's on Friday. I would argue that it's during the week, and that you have more like 70 to 80 on that particular Friday. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's their point of view. And half of them are women, and that is an outstanding number. You go to any other mosque, and that will not be the case. You go to the big mosque in Regent's Park, and that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fantastic. On the Saturday, there's maybe 20 or 30 people with a journalist course. It was like 50, and again, half are women. And that, I was absolutely shocked by that.
Now, is this near, on the Calle 45 in Chapinero, is this near to where there's a sort of there's a Palestine embassy? Is that
it's
the,
next door to the so if you ever want to look for that mosque, and you ask somebody where is Piloto, then you finding university, it's very difficult not to find. You'd cut down and you'd see a Palestinian flag, which is, again, very unusual, and it's literally next door.
It's because it jumped out on me. I was driving up there and I was like, why is there a Palestinian flag there? And I have. So that would make sense that the mosque is near there. And where else could you go? So you've got the one on the 45, you've got the one on the 80th. Where else? Are there any in the south?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. The Islamic Center is in the Barrio Quirinal, which is next to Pablo VI.
Okay.
It's extremely difficult to find if you don't know what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So later I'll give you my email address in case you do want to find it. But there are opportunities. Other people do tell me there are different mosques. But the difficulty in Bogota, as Richard would have said before, is the transport. You've got to pick. I cannot go to a mosque that is more than 20 or 30 minutes walking distance, because to get a bus there would be horrendous on a Friday afternoon, lunchtime.
Miserable here with the transport. We've done other shows on transport and infrastructure. I don't want to really get on that, unfortunately, because it's collapsed. that's the basic story about it all. Now, so you go to a mosque and you're saying that most are actually Colombian. They do it in Spanish. This is really new. Because, for example, this is just an anecdote that I'm going to throw in here. I have a friend from Peru who's a journalist, and we studied together at the City University in London. We did our masters together. He came up here to do a piece on something nefarious in Colombia, and he did it for the news outlet Al Jazeera. And of course, when he told anyone he was writing for Al Jazeera, they were like, Al Qaeda. that was the reaction.
The island, actually.
I mean, when you say you're a Muslim, here in Colombia, what is their reaction to you? Looking at you, but you're a gringo.
I've never been asked that. People generally get interested in other things that I do because I'm a teacher. I teach environment, not English, and they ask me about the environment. But there is a problem, and I have asked them also, what is the challenge? And they said the biggest challenge is like that for any Colombian. So they think that we have guns, and we have drugs, and we're in Bogota's somewhere near the jungle, and then we're Muslims, so we're terrorists as well. Course, we're guerrilla terrorist people. And that means they haven't been able to get funding.
Mm-hmm.
That is extremely difficult, which is why I decided to come on the radio station not to get funding, but to enlighten people about the educational ability of a Muslim. We're not stupid, we're not uneducated. Every Colombian I've met and asked has made an educated decision. They've studied a lot. Mm-hmm. They've studied more than I have.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you come to a village and I brainwash them and hit them around the face and tell them Allah Akbar, and go and get a gun for them. It's just not the case. But it is a difficult thing for them, particularly as ignorance, as in any country, ignorance generates fear. Fear generates hatred. Hatred generates war. It goes on and on. So that's the most difficult challenge. They have the combination of being Colombian and Muslim.
And I imagine explaining to their parents as well. Yes. We've decided to turn our back on Catholicism, but we found something that's more suited to what we believe.
It's not that people's parents are not worried once you tell them, I love Jesus and I love Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And I wear hijab, and there are a lot of nuns in this country, so it's not a case of like in the UK where they go, why do you wear hijab? If you go down to Cornwall and you wear hijab, it's going to be a problem. Here, because of the nuns, it's not such a big thing. The problem comes when you get married and you're a woman. You're going to marry a terrorist, because they generally marry, a Colombian woman generally marries an Egyptian or a Tunisian. Mm-hmm. In Colombia, they like to mix. So a Colombian woman will marry Egyptian man, and a Colombian man will marry an Egyptian woman or someone who's not Colombian. It's not very common that they marry between themselves. Yeah. I don't know why.
Here in the Muslim community in Colombia, in Bogota, for example, where do most of the sort of foreign Muslims come from?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I would definitely say Egypt. I don't know why.
Uh-huh.
I had a joke that we had a deal with them that where we tell them how many women we have who want to get married, please send men over. But they tend to come from there. But there are also a lot of Americans, actually, from New York. They tend to have a Colombian heritage, but they have immigrated there, or their parents have, and then they find Islam. I spoke to one of them, and all three of his brothers have found Islam, much to his parents' dismay, because they were Jehovah's Witnesses. So that was an extreme case.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that's where I would say they would come.
Now downtown Bogota, if you go down to the centro and just behind the alcaldía, the mayor's office, there is a whole sort of pocket of Palestinian shops where they all own textiles. And now, are they involved in any of this, or have they been, you know, assimilated into the community?
The Palestinians, I've never met a Palestinian in any mosque, and I've asked people about the Palestinians because we have the embassy next door.
Yeah.
It seems to be that they have integrated into Colombia and left the Islamic route behind, which is quite sad, but quite common.
Yeah.
Particularly, I imagine, a couple of generations back when Bogota wasn't an open place. It is now, and I'm sure you've covered that. So I imagine to fit in, they did that. I have... one of my Colombian best friends, his sister's called Aisha. Why? Because her grandfather was from Palestine, but they only took the name. They didn't take the religion down. So it's interesting that the Colombians then take back the religion. So it's kind of an interesting pendulum swing, if you like.
That's a very interesting topic to touch on, because I know in Bello, Antioquia, so it's like a satellite town of Medellin, there's a lot of people of Hebrew descent, but they didn't know it until recently, and they were always asking. There's a very good piece, and you can Google it in the Washington Post if you just look, you know, sort of Judaism in Colombia, Bello. And it came up is that people didn't understand why they had the paint, you know, sort of the painting on the side of the lintels of the door, or why they tied the knots in the bottom of their ruanas, their ponchos. And then, you know, some scientists came and did some DNA testing and found that, you know, they had roots back to Israel and the Jewish faith. And many people in Bayou have converted, let's say they've reconverted, you know, back. And they're saying it just makes more sense. But of course, given Colombia's nature and its isolation, I mean, that's the truth of it. Colombia is an incredible, it's still very isolated.
Yes.
And they employed a policy of isolation, in truth, while every other Latin American country was, you know, give us your lower classes to work in the mines and whatever. Colombia was like, you don't get in unless you can read or write. And so you came in and you were of a more educated status, and of course you then had to assimilate through Catholicism, because that was the major thing. So it's very interesting to hear this sort of reconversion back to faith. And if that's happening with the Muslim faith, though, it's only a positive thing. It's making it a more multicultural society, which is
I believe so. I mean, I was in, as I said, I've been in various countries, and I'd never been to an Islamic wedding. And I was in the mosque, and they said, the sheikh said to me, Kai, marriage now. I said, to you? He said, no, I'm somebody else. And we had a marriage, we had a shahada, and I said, I can't believe it. I've been in other countries, and I've followed Islam for various years, been to the mosque every week, and I've never had any of that. And this time we have a wedding, and we have a shahada, so it's not like you have an old congregation. There are a few old people, but most of them are in their 20s. They're not generally very, very young. They get to the stage maybe at 22, 23, they start investigating at 25, they become interested. Although we do have a fair number of students as well. But they are educated, they have made educated choices. Whereas I guess the Palestinians made educated choices not to maintain their religion. So it's interesting. It's a very interesting
swing. I mean, people have suffered so much. I think sometimes behind closed doors or whatever. But anyway, if you find yourself downtown, walk behind the mayor's offices there, and you can find, I mean, like restaurants with the names like Alibaba and stuff. And I'm not being, I'm not generalizing or making, you know, sort of stereotypical comments. There is a restaurant called Alibaba's there and stuff. And, and you see things. When I was there, I had to buy some christening clothes and they seemed to have them for a godson. And of course, they said, oh, where are you from? And I went, England. And they went, oh, Balfour. And I was like, yeah, let's not talk about the politics of Balfour. I don't want to get involved in that right now. But we're going to come back in the next section and talk more in depth about Kai's experiences here and Islam in Colombia, because I think it's something no one associates Islam and Colombia. So it's a very special opportunity to be talking to someone, you know, and getting the inside detail here, and maybe you know, let's burst some stereotypical impressions of the faith and so on. So I hope for you listeners out there, this is interesting. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling, and we'll be right back.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control healthcare, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable health care, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Searching for freedom? The sustainable community in Chile is found at FreedomOrchard.com. Quiet, peaceful, and pristine are some of Freedom Orchard's outstanding features. Freedom Orchard offers recreational activities, organic farming, and self-sufficiency for water and electricity. Well-known Chile expert, free market economist, and radio host of Red Hot Chile, Dr. John Coben, is heading a team of developers, organic farmers, and seasoned professionals to make Freedom Orchard a reality. FreedomOrchard.com, for when you're serious about your freedom.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling, and we're talking to Kai Whiting, a white British Muslim here in Bogota, in Colombia. Kai, you've traveled around the country. Have you been to any of the other sort of the destinations that would be, let's say, of more importance to Muslims in Colombia, like Maicao on the border with Venezuela, where there's a big mosque? Have you been to Medellin, where I know there are mosques as well? Have you been?
I have been to Medellin, but I did some tourism because I work very hard. So I generally do actually Islamic tourism. When I went to Portugal, I looked for the mosque, which is incredibly difficult. So I put photographs on my Flickr and then put it on a tag so people could find what the mosque looks like. Because in Spain and Portugal, they're garages. They're not actually mosques. And like the mosque in Calle 45, that is actually a house. So you don't know what you're looking for. And it doesn't say mosque anywhere in Arabic or Spanish or English. And that's part of the problem.
Now, as I just want to, we've got to discuss it, and you know, it's an overwhelmingly Catholic country. Have you heard of or have you suffered discrimination as a Muslim here in Colombia?
That's a good question. The men, no. No man that I've ever spoke to, and I have done a lot because I asked for it. I did an interview for a bit about Muslim.com, which is a blog for British, for English-speaking Muslims, and they really were interested in that question. The men, no, but I guess as a man, the only thing you have to do, like I have, is to, or have to do, or should do, is grow a beard. So that's not so unusual. For the women, well, the hijab and the long clothing has presented a problem, not in Bogota, but in Medellin, where people have experienced aggressive behavior, physically aggressive behavior, with ripping off a hijab of someone, which is incredibly hurtful from a spiritual perspective, because obviously they shouldn't be touched. Or they try not to be touched by men. So if a man grabs a hijab, it's an insult on so many levels. And how would they feel if I did that to their grandma, stole their umbrella? You know? Mm-hmm. But to take something from somebody's head and to throw it on the floor and to tell them, what are you doing? You're a traitor, and insulting them.
And so this happened in Medellin.
In Medellin.
The hijab was torn from, and it's been more than one occurrence.
Yeah, I believe so. I was told so. So they do have a sizable population, because we did a conference link on Saturday at the Islamic Center with Medellin, so it's not something that there was just one person who happened to be Muslim. I do know that other Muslims from very remote areas like the Amazon region do find it difficult, but I think that they would find it difficult to be a lot of alternative things. If they were homosexual, they would find it difficult. If they liked a certain music, they would find it difficult. I know in Cartagena, if you don't like a certain type of music, you have a major problem. And so,
I have a major problem with Vallenato music.
I wasn't going to say it, but
I have a major problem with that. But, and I spend most of my time on the coast as well, so it's a real problem for me. It actually puts me in a bad mood. But no, it's upsetting to hear of actions like the ones of which you spoke. So we can only hope that let's say a sort of more open attitude towards Islam is fostered here in Colombia. And so, I mean, these are challenges. I mean, these are challenges for practicing Muslims in Colombia. And what could you say are further challenges for someone of your faith?
The biggest challenge as an individual, because I want to talk about both, is, well, there's two. I mean, Ramadan, obviously, you've got 30 days where you cannot even drink water. And I thought it would be easier here, because having been in Spain with 40 degrees, cycling 20 kilometers a day and telling my bosses, yeah, I am a little bit, not dizzy, but I'm not the best I can be. And I was an editor, which requires a lot of concentration. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be difficult, but the heat is actually more helpful. It's the cold. Mm-hmm. You get really cold about 5:30. You shiver. and the altitude gives me sickness and a headache. So I've been trying to train myself, because they said when you come here, you've got to train.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to do it like once a week, but 30 days in a row is very, very difficult.
And this is coming up in July, Ramadan.
Yeah, July to August.
And it's between dawn and dusk, right?
Yes.
Nothing can pass your lips, basically.
Nothing, yeah. Even if you have a headache, you can't take a tablet. In Poland last year, I was sick. I was in a wheelchair. I had to give up Ramadan. I had to do it. That's why I'm now practicing, because I still have to put my 5 more days in before July. So that's a major challenge. The other challenge is the need to pray, the obligation to pray the Salat, 5 compulsory prayers. When you say, I need to pray at like this time, I mean, who is going to give you that time to pray? Mm-hmm. Where are you going to pray? I mean, I end up praying in the toilet. It's not the most brilliant thing. It's not the most clean thing. So it's very difficult. Or on a Friday, you say, it's a very sacred day. You know, if I don't go to the mosque 3 times and I'm able to go, they say, and there's a saying that you're not really Muslim. Mm-hmm. Right? The Friday Muslim. And to say, I need to go to the mosque, I have my obligations. And it's very difficult. It's very far. The transport is very difficult. So that we try at the mosque to offer food. We give free food and free mm-hmm. drink. So at least we try to unburden as much as possible. And that's a major, major challenge. A challenge as a mosque is, as I said, having funds, getting funds. In the UK, they tend to get funds. I think it was the Queen's father built one biggest mosque, the Regent's Park, with that money. Mm-hmm. But in Colombia, it's not recognised mm-hmm. as such. Like the Catholic faith, it was recognised as a mosque in Calle 45 in 1997 by the ministry, but there's no funding. There's nothing to help them. There's no lottery funding. In the UK, we take that a lot for granted, that mosques can get hold of that kind of funding for community projects. And that's a real struggle, though. They're trying to fight what I would call a losing battle.
Yeah, the Ramadan issue is interesting. When I did my master's at City University, it was an international course, so I had colleagues from the Yemen and Pakistan and other places, and I've never met a tetchier bunch during lectures and the final lecture of the day, which was sort of, you know, span from 4 till 6, they would all be seated at the back because they didn't want to be involved with anyone, you know, with a tray of dates beside them, just watching, yeah, you know, watching their watch. Yeah, you know, like it was so fine, but they were, you know, it's like we knew not to approach them at these times, because you know, honestly, it was like they were just so sort of, you know, it was brittle. Yes. You know, it's like anyway. So, but in terms of that, you know, as a personal and the altitude here, 2,600 meters. I mean, it affects me, but I don't have to fast. You haven't had any problems like the mosques here with people graffitiing them with any sort of, like, let's say,
anti-Islamophobia.
Nothing.
I don't know Medellin. I haven't discussed there, but not in Bogota. So I guess the major challenge in people not respecting would be the need to eat halal, which is another challenge.
Where do you get your halal meat?
I'm vegetarian here.
Okay, so
I've eaten vegan. The only time that I eat meat is after fasting, because I really need
the protein, yeah.
and I really crave it. But I mean, it is difficult. It's difficult to get halal, and it's difficult to explain it. And also, I'm allergic to fish, so I can't even eat that. But yeah, trying to explain to someone why you can't eat meat can be quite difficult. Or if you go to Cartagena, they give you frijoles with pork.
Yeah, of course.
And that's very difficult. And you tell them, I don't want pork, and they feel offended. And you can't explain to every single Colombian why you don't want to eat pork.
It's got to be very difficult if you're allergic to fish. I mean, you've essentially moved into vegetarianism here, which is not the easiest thing either. Here, it's possible, but when you can ask for a vegetarian soup, and you've got a chicken foot floating in it, but it's chicken. You know, it's like it's got to be very, very difficult. I mean, you've really set yourself, you know, a task being a Muslim here. And you know, hearing from it, it sounds like you're well, you know, you've made a lifestyle for yourself, and you're comfortable in it. And I wouldn't know where you could get halal meat. I mean, I'm sure there are places.
You can buy it from the mosque, actually, because I live with 4 3 vegetarians, I just decided I'm just going to be vegetarian. And so, actually, one of the things that I wrote as a journalist was where you can eat vegan food.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that as I live very near, that I have La Revolución de la Cuchara next door to my house. You know, so
you're the best customer.
And I'm there every week. And opposite, I have an expat cafe called New York Cafe Lounge. There's a really nice cheesecake and does vegetarian food twice a week. So I kind of make a note of where I can get vegetarian food. Because, yeah, I asked for a vegetarian pizza in Cartagena and they gave me pork. I had nothing. I got nothing else to eat. I had nowhere else to go. I was in a barrio, I wasn't in the city, and I was just like, I'm really ill.
It's true. It's tough. It's difficult. And so, I mean, if you were to offer advice for any sort of future expats or visitors who are Muslim who want to come to Colombia, what pieces of advice could you offer them? You know, about because your faith is the crux of your existence, really. I mean,
from 5 o'clock in the morning.
What kind of advice could you offer them when visiting Colombia?
I think the first thing I would say would be email me. That's Whiting, WHITINGKE at yahoo.co.uk, United Kingdom. Whiting like the fish, ironically. So that's Whiting, KE at yahoo.co.uk. Email me because you will have very specific questions. Other than that, be prepared to be vegetarian. Because you can get halal, but it's very difficult. There's not a culture in Colombia of eating sandwiches in your house. It's very much eat out at lunch, have a soup, have some bread, have some drink. It is cheap. There are options. Put yourself in a place where you know there are vegetarian restaurants. So in Chapinero would be a good place to locate yourself because you have the mosque, you have the Islamic school near Pablo VI, so that you're very close. You just catch a bus and you're there. In 25 minutes, and make sure that as you are interested in Islam or you're a follower, you are actually following Islam, that you make your life as easy as you can. And if you're interested in Islam, well, yeah, you can email me or you can pop down to the mosque. We've said a lot that it's in Calle 45 next to Piloto. They do teach universities and schools about Islam. They do come in and talk to them about that. So yeah. You know, do your research. Don't just come to Colombia thinking it's going to be easy. It's a very difficult country. It's a challenge. Please learn some Spanish. That will help you tremendously. I'm a fluent Spanish speaker. I write in Spanish. I write academic material in Spanish. And I cannot tell you how important that is and how that will help you as a Muslim integrate. Because if you don't speak Spanish, people will fear you. People will see you as the terrorist. So if you can speak Spanish and you can be polite and you can show that you're educated, then you have no problem.
I think my final question is it comes almost rhetorically and as a piece of advice. I think you should set up a website to advise Muslims, expat Muslims in Colombia. I think you should. I think it would because I can't promise that you're going to get a flurry of emails. We don't know how many people are listening at the moment to this show or anything, but I mean, what happens when your email box explodes? But I would put up just a quick site saying, here's the advice.
You should say that. I'm working with the mosque to build their awareness. Like I've written in the City Bogota paper, which is owned by Nova Richard. He's probably been here before.
So yeah, he's been on the show. One of the first interviewees.
Yeah, I'm speaking on productivemuslim.com about us, and I'm talking in the another Muslim paper based in London. Basically, I don't want to lead it. I just want to open the door and give the mosque, give the Colombians the control. So I am talking to them about that. Mm-hmm. But if I opened up a website, I think that would take away the control. Mm-hmm. And I think as expats, as you have done yourself, we have to integrate and we have to stop using our Britishness to dictate. So I am working with them, but it has to be on their terms. And I think if you are Muslim and you come to Colombia, remember it's Colombia and you must do things on their terms.
I think it's a really, really poignant message to end on there. You know, we are visitors, we are guests in this country. You need to assimilate as much as possible. And Kai has clearly done that through his faith. And he was mentioning to me as we met that I'm one of the first sort of white expats he's met.
The only white expat I've ever met.
I realize it's an expat radio station, but it's very, very key messages here, and it's so positive to hear that in Bogota and in most places a Muslim is not at risk of any discrimination. And I think we've really been entitled to something incredibly informative with you today, Kai. So I'd like to thank you for being on the show and sharing your faith with us.
Thank you very much.
So, listen, you can always be in touch with me if you've got questions or you want to suggest people for the show. Get in touch via the email, which is columbiacalling@gmail.com. Check out our website, columbiacallingradio.com. And, of course, the podcast is on iTunes for those of you who need to download. I've been Richard McCall talking to Kai Whiting. This is Columbia Calling. Thank you for listening.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.